This is Common Ground, a program on world affairs and the people who shape events.
Like from the late 70s to the mid 80s, 1 year was exactly like the other for, you know, for almost every person. And nothing ever changed. It only got a little grayer every year, maybe. That was all.
Searching for rainbows in communist Czechoslovakia. We'll talk with Czech writer Iva Pekarková on this edition of Common Ground. Common Ground is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. Czech writer Iva Pekarková was just 22 in 1985 when she escaped to the West from her home in Czechoslovakia. She says she'd had the idea for years to write a novel about life behind the Iron Curtain, but was afraid to. In 1992, she published that novel called Truck Stop Rainbows, which was released this year in paperback. Truck Stop Rainbows is about a defiant university student who seeks escape from her dismal surroundings through hitchhiking. And with her photography, she documents the polluted and the damaged landscape of her country.
What I was trying to do in this book, I was trying to sort of describe how I, and not just I, felt about Czechoslovakia and how we perceived of the whole situation. So it's about this woman who doesn't quite fit in. I guess you can feel, you could feel fairly comfortable even in Czechoslovakia of the early 80s, as long as you did fit in, as long as you did some things in the right, so-called right way, which the government liked. But this woman, my heroine, she doesn't really. She just wants to do what she wants to do. And this way she gets into a lot of trouble all the time. Just, you know, she hitchhikes on the highway. She's taken off the truck or cars and whatever for no reason. She's interrogated. And she's like slowly getting fed up with it. And in fact, only very, very few people in her life mean anything to her, which of course was symptomatic of our age, you know, in the 80s, because you never knew who can be a secret police informer. You may talk to a perfectly nice, decent person, and then you find out he was a stool pigeon or whatever, and there are so many of them. So she is trying to get some kind of freedom out of this no-go situation in Czechoslovakia. This is just about it. And then she has this good friend who is more or less dying of multiple sclerosis, and she gets into this really hopeless situation. She's trying to get a wheelchair for him, but it's very hard.
They weren't abundant in Czechoslovakia.
Sorry?
The wheelchairs weren't abundant in Czechoslovakia at that
time.
No,
you would get one for free eventually, or almost for free. But he was put on a 10-year waiting list or something, while he almost couldn't walk anymore.
Did you know people in that kind of
Absolutely.
Situation?
Absolutely. I knew one or two people like this who were in the precisely the same kind of situation. So it was not like I made it all up. This is exactly what happened.
Truck Stop Rainbows paints such a dismal picture of Czechoslovakia during that period. What period would you say that would be? Was that during the early 80s?
Well, I think you can say early to mid 80s, but I always keep saying it didn't really matter because like from the late 70s to the mid 80s, 1 year was exactly like the other for, you know, for almost every person. And nothing ever changed. It only got a little grayer every year, maybe. That was all.
Was it a story that you could have written in Czechoslovakia, if you had been able to find a publisher? Also, would it have been published?
No. Well, of course, it was published after the revolution, and you know, after I have written it, about 2.5 years later, it was published in Canada by a Czech publishing house called 68 Publishers. But it was a book absolutely unthinkable. You know, I mean, you couldn't think about publishing it in Czechoslovakia and the communism. Forget it.
What was it that makes you know that they wouldn't have published that or allowed it?
Oh my goodness! I mean, you couldn't. You know, it's like the scene was so terrible. I mean, you couldn't imagine it. There are a few prominent writers, even a few, you can say, prominent young writers, but most of them were whores. You know, I hope you can leave this word on the tape, because they sort of sell their soul and whatever to them. You know, to buy them some kind of sinecure or whatever, or the ability to publish books. So there were very, very few writers who were published legally under communism and who knew how to write. Of course, there were good writers like Bohumil Hrabal, who I think is one of the best Czech writers now. He's old now, he's like 80, I think. And this guy had established himself back in the 60s. In other words, he was well known by then, so he could publish some of his books and some of his stories. He usually writes like long stories or novellas or whatever, and he could do it, but sometimes they would like tell him, well, you must not leave this passage in the book because otherwise it can't be published, and you must make sure that this outcome is not so gloomy as it is, and blah, 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 blah. And sometimes he would comply because he wanted to be published, but he didn't have to, you know, become a completely different kind of writer. He didn't have to. But there are so many people who sort of would do anything just to, you know, be published at any cost. And usually the best ones were never, ever, ever published under communism.
In your book, Truck Stop Rainbows, how much of the main character, Fialka, is that how you pronounce her name? How much of her is you?
Oh, well, this is a very good question. I usually, because I don't know what else to say, I usually use Milan Kundera, who talks about his heroes and heroines as a kind of extension of the writer's personality. So I guess this is what she is. I mean, she is not me. She becomes a hooker for a while, for example. I mean, I never ever tried to sell my body and stuff. And she does have a different kind of life, but she did have sometimes very similar opinion to me, of course.
But the disenchantment with the world and the view of this gray vision of the world that I take was you.
Well, basically mine, all this Weltschmerz and stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was just me. I think there are so many people my age who felt very, very similar about the whole situation.
Well, tell us about the importance of rainbows then in this very gray, dismal world.
Well, you know, just like anywhere else. You know, it may be raining, it may not be such a nice weather, but you look up at the sky and, wow, there's a rainbow. So it sort of makes your life less miserable. This is just about it.
And it was also something impermanent, and there was something about the impermanence of the rainbow.
Yeah, it's also very impermanent, and you can't really catch it. You can't own a rainbow no matter what you do. And I guess in a society which is based on ownership and, you know, like, I have to grab it and go for it and bring it home and have it, you know. The rainbow is something you just can't have. You gotta live the rainbow. You have to see it, and you can keep it with you in a way, but you can't own it, which is kind of nice.
You said about midway through the book, Fialka, or the characters started taking on their own personalities. Well, towards the end of the book, the main character, Fialka, was given an opportunity to leave Czechoslovakia. A Swedish truck driver asked her to marry him, and she decided not to. Was that conscious, or was that...
Oh, well, I wanted her to stay there and live a miserable life. You know, I didn't want anything good for her, because when I was writing it, I was already sitting in Boston. But to tell you the truth, you know, the decision between going and not going was, you know, like you are walking on a razor blade, and then you say, well, okay, I'll fall on this side or I'll fall on the other, because you have to decide and, you know, make sure you know what you want before you leave. And she wasn't sure she wanted to leave, because as disgusted as she was, she didn't really want to leave her homeland. And of course I left, but I didn't want to leave it. I just felt like I had not much other, you know, no other choices, so I just did it and left.
So you had her make the other choice of staying.
Yes, exactly, yeah, so she's not to me, at least in this.
Well, and it wasn't too long after that that Czechoslovakia went through a major change with the Velvet Revolution.
It wasn't, but, you know, I mean, it's not too long when, because we know it now.
Right, but you
had
no idea.
1985, you had no idea. None.
You know, you've returned to Prague, it says in the press materials, since you left. Mm-hmm. When was that?
Oh, well, in fact, the first time I returned to Prague was in December 1989, you know, like a few weeks after the revolution. As soon as the border opened, and as soon as I was like half sure they would let me back out and whatever, I flew to Frankfurt, and then I hitchhiked to Prague, and everything was in tumult and everything was perfect. And ever since I've been returning, and I've been visiting for a long, long time.
What did it feel like in those first weeks after the revolution? Was it a different country?
Oh, this was Czechoslovakia at its best for me, because I saw something which I had never seen before. You know, as gray as the landscape had ever been and stayed, people were so much nicer to each other. You couldn't really believe, you know, that strangers will say hello to each other in the streets. And, oh, so we got rid of the communists. Perfect, you know. Okay, happy new year and whatever. So this was a few weeks when people really did feel happy, probably. Then, of course, you know, all kinds of little problems started creeping in and people started not being so happy again. But this was a few beautiful weeks.
Does it feel as gray to you as it did in those pre-1989 years?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still pretty gray. I mean, you can't really say it's not. Of course, they are fixing up some old buildings and such stuff, so, you know, it's getting less gray.
One thing I really liked about your book is, despite, you know, this kind of dismal pall that hangs over thing, it is a very hopeful book, especially since so much of it focuses on the interior of the characters and their search for, I guess, their soulfulness, and that I found very hopeful, and says that it, in any situation there is something internal that can sustain you.
Well, I guess, you know, the situation in Czechoslovakia was bad, but it wasn't as bad as if you were living in a POW camp or something. But so you always, I mean, if you want to keep on living, you had to find something good in it. This was the whole point, too.
Some of the descriptions that you had of Prague in those years, those housing complexes reminded me of this quote from Sartre, I believe, who said, hell is other people. And
just about, yeah.
Didn't sound like a place I wanted to live. There was, when I was reading it earlier today, I was going over that part where you were talking about the television that the main character got for her grandmother, and you were talking about the power of television in communist countries, and it has this incredible hold on people. Well, now that you've been here in the free world for a few years, I've wondered if you've noticed there's a lot of similarity between the power of television here and what you wrote about.
Yeah, sure. I mean, television is pretty powerful everywhere. The thing was, I guess, you know, in Czechoslovakia of the 80s or whatever, people talked about television in reverent tones. It was like, you know, the thing, you turn it on, there's two channels, you know. So you have either the Soviet something or some kind of propaganda on the other channel. And you sit there, you miss your dinner, you miss whatever, you know, you just look at it and then it seeps into your brain. Here, I guess people, even though they do turn the TV on quite often, you know, they don't seem to believe it so much, which I think is good.
You know, even though you wrote the book once you had left Czechoslovakia and had seen quite a few countries in the West by then, were you consciously writing in the voice of a Czech person who had never been outside the country?
Yes.
Because I thought, well, some of her views of the West were rather naive.
Because
idealized.
This is exactly how I was until, well, maybe she was even more naive than I ever was. But you know, you are naive. I mean, how much can you learn about the West when there's no information, no books, no real contact with foreigners? How much can you get to know?
What kind of conceptions did you have of the West that were challenged once you came here?
Oh, there was one big disappointment, I must tell you. I always had imagined America as some kind of hitchhiker's paradise based on my reading of, you know, Jack Kerouac and stuff like this. And then once I hitchhiked from Boston to Florida.
25 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, we did have this view of sort of like 25, 30 years ago. And once I hitchhiked from Boston to Florida, and I said, well, Eva, you can't hitchhike here anymore. It's too dangerous. It's not for you. If you want to hitchhike again, go to Europe, go to Asia, go to Africa. But, you know, don't hitchhike in the United States.
I can imagine that would be a disappointment because...
Well, it was quite disappointing, but it's just one thing, you know, I can take it.
Listening to Common Ground, it's a service of the Stanley Foundation. My guest is Czech writer Eva Pekarková, who now lives in New York City. We're talking about her novel Truck Stop Rainbows. The Stanley Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue about world affairs. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available. You can listen at the end of this broadcast for details. How did you get out of Czechoslovakia?
Well, I managed to get a permit to go to Yugoslavia, which was like halfway out because Yugoslavia was not in the classic Eastern Bloc. And then from Yugoslavia, I sneaked across the border to Italy. And once I was in Italy, I was safe, and then I ended up in Austria. And in Austria, you know, they took me to a refugee camp, which I had never quite known it existed. And it was a nice, you know, it was nice to know it because I hadn't expected any help whatsoever. And then there was this camp, you know, food and shelter and whatever. And so, you know, that's where we stayed for a long time, applying for going to various countries, applying for asylum.
And did you choose the U.S.?
I chose Australia first, and they rejected me, so I chose the U.S. later.
And they gave you asylum?
Yeah.
Were these refugees all from Eastern Europe?
Well, no, we had quite a few... Well, of course, lots of us were from Eastern Europe, but we had so many people from Afghanistan then, because, you know, this was a time when people had to leave Afghanistan, and we had a lot of people from the Middle East, from Iran and from, you know, like lots of Kurds from Kurdistan and stuff like this. I mean, if you can call the part between Turkey and Iran, Kurdistan.
Now, you have a book coming out later this year, don't you, about your experiences in the camp?
Yeah, there should be this book coming out in July by Farah Strauss and Giroux, and it's going to be called The World is Round. And this is precisely what it is about. It's about this woman who wants to make sure that the world is round and they haven't been lying to her again, even about this, because, of course, she either believes it or she doesn't.
But she again comes from Czechoslovakia?
She comes from Czechoslovakia, and she ends up precisely in the same refugee camp as I did, in room number 7. And she lives a kind of different life from mine, but all her experiences could have happened to me, even, you know, some of them, thank goodness, didn't.
One of the quotes that your character in Truck Stop Rainbow says that I found interesting was that if I could just polish my languages, and I'm paraphrasing here, I could finally reach some understanding of the world.
I still think so. Yeah. But she also felt very, very helpless. I mean, she was namely, she was talking about English because she sort of felt that any book or anything should be available in English, and every, you know, thinking person on earth speaks at least some English and whatever, which may not be true, but that's how she felt. And she felt like, you know, she felt like whatever she's learning in Czech or whatever she's reading in Czech may or may not be true, because there was always this governmental influence and whatever. So she was like, you know, looking to English as the language to know.
Well, how do you think the experiences of your generation have shaped Czechoslovakia today and will shape the future? Because they're the people coming into power, and obviously they were at the heart of the Velvet Revolution. It was the students in 89 who were very much at the center of everything.
Yeah, well, this is a very, very hard question to answer, because no one really knows what's going to happen to my country. Now it had divided into Bohemia and Slovakia. The economy in Slovakia is much, much worse now. Bohemia seems to be fine so far. But all of a sudden we have two small countries. All of a sudden so many problems we didn't even know about before keep popping up, like the treatment of other races by the Czechs, which is really a disgrace to my country, you know, like the way they treat the gypsies, or they even think about whatever black students or Asian people, namely from Vietnam, who we have in Prague. I mean, this is incredibly stupid, you know, the way the people do it. And there's also, you know, lots of problems when it comes to social benefits for older people and whatever. But in general, I think the development is very, very good, especially because these people who were students in 89, I mean, you must not say it was only the students doing. I mean, there are so many good people who just, you know, helped them do whatever they needed. And I don't think the students could have made it without, you know, all the others. And I remember my father who's going to be 70 this year. And in 89, he was, you know, in the Wenceslas Square every day, and, you know, and like shouting and screaming and waving, whatever. And he, you know, he was quite old. So it wasn't just the students. But anyway, these new students are growing up. The generation is growing up. So I believe in this way, the damages which have been done to communism, by communism, cannot be undone, but they can be sort of outgrown. You know, so the people who are 45 or 50 years old now will not get much better off, but no one can really do much about it. But, you know, the people who are 25 or 30 will become completely different personalities. I guess this is what it's going to be, I hope.
Do you think you'll go back to live?
Oh, this is a good question, too. I mean,
and
I
would
just
you live
spent
in Bohemia or in Slovakia?
Well, I come from Prague, which is Bohemia, so I would probably more or less live in Prague. But Slovakia is a great country, too. I mean, it's, you know, they have much better nature, I think. Beautiful mountains and whatever. So you don't really have to choose. I mean, you can just keep traveling and whatever. And I have decided I'm not going to choose whether I want to live in Bohemia, or I mean my homeland, or whether I want to live in the United States. I don't have to choose, and I'm not going to choose.
So now you've got this book coming out this summer about the experiences in the refugee camp,
yeah.
And you're working on another book?
In fact, right now, yeah, I am sitting at home trying to work on a book, a novel, called Give Me the Money. It's a tentative title, but I think this is what it's gonna be called. And it's supposed to be about driving a taxi in New York City.
Which you have a lot of experience doing.
Yeah, in fact, I've had a license, a hack license, for 4 years now. In fact, a little longer. So, you know, I have quite a bit of experience doing it, and this is going to be a novel, though, so I'm going to exaggerate here and there a little bit, but the basics should be what it is.
Do you like driving a cab in New York City?
Actually, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm going to try to write a book about, so it's kind of hard to just explain, you know, why you like it and why you don't like it so much, maybe. But it's a great job in terms of, you know, getting to know the city and getting to know your way around and maybe falling in love with New York. Because if you know something very well, especially when it's a city like New York, you are bound to fall in love with it.
Would you ever imagine living this life, say, 10 years ago when you were...
No, I never quite imagined what I would do. But one thing I didn't imagine was, like, you know, having a baby at 22 and having a nice suburban house who knows where. So in this case, I was sort of right about my own future.
Well, you seem like a person who you leave yourself open to new opportunities. And
yeah, I guess that's what I'm doing. And so far, I was never, you know, disappointed.
Well, would you mind reading a passage from the book for us? I like the one where she's talking about not feeling this need to get married, and still it's at a fairly young age.
Yeah. Okay, page 53, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't looking for any security. In a world fenced in by barbed wire, a world of filth, sickness, and radioactivity, a world as tired and worn as a pair of jeans that haven't been washed for 5 years, the concept of security was absurdly subjective. The security seekers were desperate escapists. They sought shelter from the hurricane under their bedsheets. At the sight of blood, they closed their eyes and plunged their ostrich heads into the sands of their private wastelands. In the shadow of the mushroom cloud, they scratched out little trenches in their gardens and brought their one and only's home hand in hand to have someone to lean on. I wasn't looking for the security of anyone's embrace. To my taste, that was too high a price to pay in jealousy and captivity. I didn't need any of that. For me, the most beautiful security was serendipity. The serendipity that ruled everywhere. The serendipity of the rainbow. The magnificent, alluring, dangerous, and dependable serendipity of the road. Serendipity, whose only law was that she brought you the most iridescent adventures precisely when you expected them least and wanted them most. The serendipity of the instant, who could give you anything as long as you knew how to obey her.
Eva Pekarkova has been my guest on Common Ground. She escaped from Czechoslovakia in 1985 and now makes her living driving a cab and writing in New York City. Her new novel, called The World is Round, is due out this summer. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. If you'd like to order a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this Common Ground program, you can contact Journal Graphics at 1-800-825-5746. Ask for program number 9424. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation, which sponsors the program, or you have some comments about the program, you can write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa. The zip code is 52761. Again, to purchase transcripts or tapes, contact Journal Graphics at 1-800-825-5746 and ask for program number 9424. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.